Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and today I'm going to be talking with Petri Dish. And Petri Dish is a micro broadcaster and organizer. He was working with and one of the founders of Radio Mutiny in Philadelphia, which is a low power, meaning under 100 watts, unlicensed radio station. And you can tell the story about what happened to that. Pete, and also now you're working with the Prometheus Radio Project. So let's hear all about it.
Well, sure. I was part of the Radio Mutiny Collective, and Radio Mutiny was an all-volunteer anti-profit radio collective that ran an unlicensed station for about a year and a half. In West Philadelphia, our station was confiscated by the FCC in June of 98.
That's the Federal Communications Commission, for people who don't know. Probably most people do, but not necessarily everybody, and they make the rules about who can and can't be on the air in the United States.
And I... ever since then, and our broadcasts were part of a campaign of civil disobedience to get the laws changed around who can and cannot broadcast and have a radio license in the United States. So once our station was confiscated, a few of us got together and decided that even though we had lost our physical radio station, we perceived that we had won quite a bit in the court of public opinion, and that we may very well be able to leverage the government, working with a broad coalition of people to create a new low power radio service. And in fact, that's sort of how it did work out. The FCC passed a new low power radio service in January of 1999, and while the service is not everything that we had hoped for, it does mean that probably, 800, 900 new stations will go on the air across the country over the course of the next year. And so what Prometheus Radio Project does is we are involved in promoting licensed community radio. We go around from place to place and we talk to community groups and nonprofit organizations and activists and tell them, This is your big chance. There will not be another time. It's been 20 years since a significant number of radio stations have been non-commercial radio stations have been licensed by the FCC. It probably won't come again. It's sort of this year or nothing.
I want to ask you, Pete, before we get into what's going on with the licensing now, since the FCC did indeed change the regulations, at least for the moment, as you were saying, I wonder if you think that this is a good example, and both you and I mean, this is not the first time we've met. We've been meeting over the years at micro radio conferences. I'm also involved in the micro radio movement, and I'm on Berkeley Liberation Radio and used to be on Free Radio Berkeley before it got taken off the air, or we shut down because the FCC was going to shut us down if we didn't choose to shut down. So I'm wondering, but now that things have changed somewhat, and I wonder if you think that this is a good example of how activists can change things.
I think it is. The deeper I get into it, the more I wonder. it is a very significant victory. There's no doubt about it. There's going to be 800 stations licensed where none were before. And out of those stations, I bet 100 or 150 are going to be cool new local community groups running a neighborhood radio station. And that's an incredible victory in this time. On the other hand, I've gotten through this a real bird's eye view of American democracy and just how Washington works. And, it was a combination of factors that allowed us to win this new service, among them a sympathetic chief of the FCC. It definitely had to do with some of the very excellent activism that people did and work in that regard. It was that some of us were willing to go back and do our homework and learn the engineering and learn all that sort of thing. And it was also the threat of the pirate movement, of the FCC realizing that this could really spiral out of control. And there could be a general sentiment in this country that the FCC is no better than, say, the IRS, a government agency out to take people's rights. And so that combination managed to win us a significant victory against a very, very powerful opponent. On the other hand, I've seen that victory get watered down and watered down and watered down. And, there are some very disappointing things. The most disappointing is that some of the major urban areas in the United States are just not going to get very much in the way of low power radio in this round. We are still very hopeful that we will be able to persuade the FCC over the course of the next couple of years, once the interference issue shakes out and a lot of these go on in more mid-sized cities and it's demonstrated that the interference just isn't an issue, we're hoping we can persuade the FCC to further expand to places like San Francisco and Philadelphia and New York and L.A., where very few licenses are allocated at this point.
Well, aren't they saying there's no licenses in these areas, these urban areas, because there's no space on the radio band?
Well, that's what they say. In fact, what we've demonstrated by, doing engineering studies is that there is space on the band. And, of course, we have one engineer that says that, or a couple of engineers that say that, and the NAB has a couple of engineers that say the opposite, that even what the FCC already did is too much.
I think this is the first time you mentioned the NAB.
Oh, the National Association of Broadcasters. Our chief opponents, they spend about $17 million a year to influence public policy through lobbying and through campaign contributions. So they, it's a funny thing. Science is, some people think of it as a body of facts, but in fact it is a process, and it is, it is highly political. What counts for science? Is science just something that people with degrees practice? Is science, just something that people with money can buy enough people with degrees to practice in a certain way? So while there are many ways that people with different political glasses can interpret the facts as they've been discovered, the studies were remarkably similar in what they found, but the interpretation, of course, was very different. We were comfortable when we saw the results in claiming that the level of interference that will be caused by low-power radio stations under this new service is so small as to be practically meaningless. It takes place within a radius of about 300 feet or so around the transmitter, and it only takes place in very certain circumstances with certain kinds of receivers. And we felt that the public benefit far of having new voices on the airwaves far outweighed that half a block radius where people might have difficulty, listening to the next channel on a Walkman. but they can hear it perfectly fine with a stereo receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So
it always just doesn't make any kind of reason. I don't know anything about the scientific technological part of it, but it just doesn't make sense to me that a little teeny weeny low power station can interfere with a great big huge station. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, it really doesn't. And the scales of these things have been totally blown out of proportion by a very cynical campaign by the National Association of Broadcasters. I mean,
the National Association of Broadcasters, we have to say, as the corporate media, basically, is it just a lobbying organization? And it seems to be more international than I thought. Can you say a little bit, Petri-Dish, about exactly what the National Association of Broadcasters is? And then I hope you can come back to your thoughts since I'm interrupted.
Well, the National Association of Broadcasters is mostly an American-based group. They do have a certain amount of hand in international policy, but they primarily are a lobbying group and a membership organization. One of the biggest things they do is the National Association of Broadcasters conventions and shows, which is basically a sort of a schmooze fest where many people in industry get together, they compare notes, they figure out, you know, how they can get their workers to do more work for less money, they figure out where they can buy equipment the cheapest, and they get a chance to showcase the emerging technologies. So that's basically what they do. They are an organization that I think is deeply troubled, and I think the Vopower FM has shown what some of the problems of being a big Washington bully are. It's hard to say what the identity of being a broadcaster means today, because on the one, it used to be that all broadcasters were sort of similar because you couldn't own more than 20 radio stations across the country, 20 FMs and 20 AMs. So there wasn't that much difference between Joe Schmo that owned one station and, some small network that owned 40 stations. A big difference, but not that big. With the passage of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, all of a sudden, you have Joe Schmo with one station and you have AM/FM with 800 stations. And the interests of these two groups are very, very different. The large group owners are pushing for more deregulation, and the smaller guys are like, how am I going to stay in this business? When you think about the economies of scale in radio, if you are Disney and you own 100 stations, which they do, if you make your programming in Los Angeles in a single studio and you send it out to 100 stations across the country, you get 100 ad revenues for that. Whereas a local programmer can only uses it once, and they get one ad revenue. So it's 100 times more effective, their investment in their programming.
And, of course, mostly those small stations don't stay in business these days.
Oh, yeah, they're going out of business left and right. So I think that the problem that the NAB has is, how do you hold together the National Association of Broadcasters? Because a company like Disney, they have their own lobbyists that go to Washington and take care of their interests. Already, Fox has left the National Association of Broadcasters, as has NBC. And they have left because they don't need the NAB anymore. Even though they've pushed the NAB to have, and they push and they push, and some of the reasons they've left the NAB is because they feel like the NAB is not aggressive enough in pushing for more concentration. So these big group owners are saying, I don't have anything to do with these little schmoes. I don't need them. I don't need anything from this place. What Low Power FM is for the National Association of Broadcasters is it is an opportunity, I believe, to... it's sort of a common enemy. They've found an issue that they think that all broadcasters can agree upon. And they can say, look, we are your champions in Washington that are fighting off this enormous threat that is going to destroy your business.
This enormous threat of these small little stations that go probably half a mile radius, or sometimes up to 20.
Yeah. It's absurd. But it's worked quite well for them, and they have quite a few people, you know, keeping themselves in a job for another year or two because, you know, to fight this thing. And I think that, you know, they felt like they were taking on the easiest people they could possibly be fighting. I mean, a bunch of nonprofits, without engineers on staff, without, you know, without all that sort of thing. So that's what's up with them, I think, mm-hmm. is they really want to, you know, they really wanted an enemy that they could fight and they could win. It's actually a classic organizer's tactic. Mm-hmm. Pick an enemy that you can beat real easily to show your power.
Well, that's really interesting because that sure doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it's really been hard for me to understand. I want to let people know that my guest is Petri Dish, who is now working with the Prometheus Radio Project. So tell me about the Prometheus Radio Project. I see that you're doing something in November called a radio barn raising in Opelousas, Louisiana. Well, you're doing that along with the Southern Development Foundation?
That's true. We are extremely hopeful that by November 17th, one of the first, some of the first licenses will be issued for Low Power FM. And we've gotten together with an over 25-year-old civil rights organization called Southern Development Foundation, who applied in the first round for a Low Power FM license. And they are a great group. They host the world's largest Zydeco Festival every year. And they are involved in community-supported agriculture and civil rights work. And they're just a bunch of great folks, and we want to make them one of the first low-power stations on the air. And what we're calling on is we're calling on everybody that we've met over the years that works in Low Power FM, that's getting ready to build a station, to come on down to Opelousas. It's a tiny town of about 10 or 15,000 people in Louisiana, about an hour and a half away from New Orleans. And we're going to build a radio station together, and hopefully by the time we leave, we'll flip on the switch and it'll be ready. So it's a great opportunity to learn how to do it in the way that the FCC is going to accept under the new rules, which is not all that different from pirate radio, but there are some things you got to know that are you know, about the equipment and about the different rules they have. We're going to be welcoming, we're going to have workshops on how to do news stories, how to do, on internet radio, on policy issues, on how to fill out applications, and how to buy equipment, how to build radio stations, how to run your programming. So a wide range of things, that we're planning on doing, and we're real excited about it. All the pirate radio folks are gonna gag, but we've invited the FCC, and we hope that some of them can make it out to help show exactly what it is that they're going to demand of these radio stations in terms of their technical facilities and so on. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, from what I know, the FCC isn't always the enemy, and for a lot of people, it's just a job. I mean, we've been visited by the FCC. The people in my area know who are involved in the microbroadcasting know the FCC folks, and they don't sound so terrible. Besides which, they have changed the rules. I mean, the policy of the higher ups, they have made that decision. But that's so. It sounds like a really great project that you're doing in Louisiana. Is the Prometheus Radio Project got other projects?
Well, yeah. I mean, generally we travel around the country and we talk to groups that want to start radio stations. We try to get the word out about media concentration of ownership and different issues in media democracy. And we're doing our best to make sure that every nonprofit in the world that's ever thought about having a radio station or has ever had trouble, or activist groups that have had trouble getting their message out through the media, knows that this opportunity exists, that's not going to exist for long, and that they should take advantage of it.
This is the second or third time you've said that it's not going to exist for long, this opportunity.
Well, the way it works is that the whole United States is divided into five groups of 10 states. And in fact, two of those groups have already passed. About 20 states have already accepted the applications for low power radio. The way that they keep there from being too many applications is they only allow them in a 5-day period. If you file before or you file after, you're out of luck.
So you better be informed.
Yeah, so you better know. So that's why, you know, people need to know now, you know, that it's happening. And so it's now there will be another window for 10-watt radio stations in about a year or two, but I'm telling everyone, file for one of the 100-watt ones, because you're really going to a lot of the spaces that do exist under these rules are for 100-watt radio stations, and a lot of the spaces that might have been used for 10s are going to be used for 100s. So, you know, one thing I should point out, I've heard a lot of people say, these low-power radio stations, they're not for us. They are, they're for bigger groups, they're for more established groups. And that's really not true. I think the FCC has made rules. You know, there are limits on what they can do. You know, they do want you to be an organization that has a board of directors. It can't just be whoever floats in off the street this week is who runs the radio station, because they need a certain level of accountability. And I can understand that. They need the five contacts that they have on the forum to be the ones to call and who will say, oh, okay, I'll take care of it when the radio station is on the fritz or whatever. So they do need that, but you know, that's not that big a deal. And they do need, a few other things. But basically, it's not all that hard to apply for a low power FM, and it's certainly not intended for just churches or just colleges.
What kinds of people have been applying, and how does the decision get made if there's some kind of competition?
Well, it's a complicated process for winnowing them out. The first thing they do is they check if you're an organization that's been around for more than 2 years. They give a preference to that just because they like to see the stability of that. And mm-hmm. I don't know if I think that's a good idea or a bad idea, but that's how they do it. And I think that, you know, it's fair in some ways. Then they ask a few other questions like, do you intend to operate more than 12 hours per day? If you don't intend to operate more than 12 hours a day, they don't give you preference. They also ask if you intend to produce at least 8 hours per day of local programming, and they'll give you preference for that. You know, they check that you don't own any other media interests, and so, you know, the local, you know, daily newspaper owner can't build one of these. Mm-hmm. If it comes out to be a tie among organizations, they basically encourage you to share the frequency. Mm-hmm. And organizations that are willing to share get an advantage over organizations that are not willing to share.
That's fantastic! Encouraging sharing. How unusual!
It is. It was not exactly how I recommended that it be done, but I think it's a reasonable process. It's not going to be easy, because a lot of times it's going to be, you know, the neighborhood, you know, free radio station is on, you know, 8 hours a day, and then the Christian right station is on another 8 hours a day. And it's not the fairest process in the world, but I think it's what they could come up with and what they could figure out how to administrate without running afoul of Congress and running afoul. It's important to understand about the FCC that they can't make laws. They can make regulations. They can interpret the acts of Congress in certain ways, but they cannot, you know, they cannot just make things up from scratch. They have to work within the spirit and intent of the Congress. And of course, right now the FCC is a much better body under William Kennard than Congress is under, you know, whoever, Dennis Hastert and all the House Republicans. So they did what they could do without changing the fundamental laws mm-hmm. of the land.
And what sorts of organizations tend to be applying for these licenses for low-power radio from the FCC?
Well, ACORN, the Neighborhood Housing Group, has applied for a few chapters. There are lots of colleges, lots of schools, lots of a good number of community groups, just sort of, you know, neighborhood media projects and that sort of thing. A large number of churches, and about half of the churches, I'd say about half of the applicants so far have been churches. And of those, about half of those are pretty much nice churches. They're like Methodists or whatever, and they don't want to use it to evangelize. They want to use it to open a farm laborers radio station or something like that. The other half, though, I can't be quite so charitable. They are fundamentalist Christians, you know, that are sort of hell-bent on creating these national networks of satellite-fed stations. And those are quite troubling. I think that I have no problem with religious radio, but I do have a problem with non-local radio going in under low-power rules. This is not designed to be an opportunity for people to create broadcasting empires. So I think that, but there are certain forces that are trying to game it to create themselves little broadcasting empires, and I think it's quite, I want to stop it if we possibly can.
Well, one last issue before we have to end the show here, and that is we are right here where the National Association of Broadcasters, we are here. You came from the East, and I live in this area, and we are meeting up because the National Association of Broadcasters is, in fact, meeting in San Francisco for a few days right now. It's the 21st of September. So why are you here, Petri Dish?
Well, this is actually a very exciting moment for me because for so long, media activism has mostly consisted of, you know, doing content analysis and, you know, writing letters to the FCC or, you know, advocating for these broad policy goals. And, you know, most of my friends are activists and they work on issues like AIDS in Africa. They're very dynamic, they're issues that go straight to people's hearts. And the stuff that I work on is it's kind of abstract. It's, you know, it doesn't seem like a life or death thing. Thousands of people aren't going to die based on whether there are low power radio stations or not. However, this demonstration really brings to the forefront, it's very important because people are starting to realize that the media is the key issue that controls everything else. The media provide our public forum where the issues that we face in a democracy get hashed out and public opinion gets created. When that public forum is completely privately owned, we end up with a nation that's beholden to private interests. And I think it's a very exciting moment to see groups like Direct Action Network, Global Exchange, Media Alliance coming out and endorsing direct action against the people that own the media and keep it the way that it unfortunately is, under corporate control. And I think that the movement is only going to grow as a result, and we will be more successful in challenging the other issues that are important to us when we have a more democratically controlled media.
Indeed, I find in every single interview I do about all this wide range of issues, it often comes back down to we can't get in the media. So an independent media is so important. Well, I want to thank you so much, Petri Dish, and it's really good to see you again, and I will see you another time. Thanks for your time for this interview.
Thanks a lot. Good to see you again, and we'll see you at the next one.
The struggle continues. Okay, my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.